you have to deal with big stress, right? And as we are all right now in a private jet, my first question is, are you happy?
I would find it disrespectful to ask someone who's in the middle of a war, are you happy? It's like, does it really fucking matter? You're doing what you need to do.
Mr. Eman Garzi.
I'm going to show you the 17 money secrets to make your first million.
I am probably one of the most stoic people you'll ever meet. I just don't feel pressure. I don't know what it is.
It's never got to do like a little wave of Eman, hey, and you're like, ah.
No.
You really don't give a fuck. You tell me, look at me straight in the eyes.
I'll look you straight in the eyes and I'll tell you, I don't feel that. Pretty much everything I do for everyone, for the people around me. So sometimes I feel that and I go, fuck, man, like, why me?
When you're on a jet or you're flying first class, business class or whatever, people look at you and they're like, oh, this guy looks like a trust fund kid. No, and then they say, what does your dad do? And it was funny, the response, you said, don't know, never met the guy.
I thought I was crazy. Yep. At the time that I'm 26, 27, I want to spend 40% of everything I make and save 60. Basically, every 3 to 4 years, that percentage increases by 10%. Because I want to die with no money. And I'm not giving my son anything.
Zero.
Fuck that.
What's the ultimate goal for Eman Garzi?
Muy buenas a todos y bienvenidos a un nuevo podcast, The Nude Project. Today, we're doing something different. Today, we have our first podcast in English. He's called Eman Garzi. He's only 23 and we're not in a regular studio.
Where the fuck are we, Eman? We're in a private jet, bro. Like, life is crazy.
Well, first of all, welcome, Eman.
You're welcome.
To the podcast. Bienvenidos a un nuevo podcast, The Nude Project.
¡Vamos!
¡Díselo!
Thank you for having me on. I know, obviously, you guys don't usually do English,
awesome.
But yeah, I'm very honored.
Hey, we're gonna make an exception, bro, as the first person. And I want to explain a bit of why we're here, you know, because I can imagine people can see the background, and the background is not our studio, but it's, I don't know, like 20,000 kilometers above Budapest right now. And this all came to be because I texted Eman like a while ago. I was like, I have a huge respect for what you do. Respect for everything you've kind of built, you know, and I'd been following him for a while. He texted back and he said he'd seen the podcast and he wanted to make it happen. And I was like, of course, whenever you want. He's like, okay, like in a couple of weeks, I'm flying from Budapest to London. If you guys want to hop on the jet I'm flying, you guys are used to doing like special locations for the podcast. So let's make it happen in a jet.
You guys have done some of the sickest locations.
Give a bit more of context. We got Jesse here filming with us. He's our main filmer. He does everything with us.
Shout out to Jesse.
And bro, Jesse trips over you. Like, he'll be in the office like, yo, Bruno, you see the new Eman video, man? Like, he's very good. He's from Albania. He's fully focused gym bro, you know, and he just trips over you. And we're coming over. He said, I want to give him like a gift. Do you mind if I give him a gift, bro? I'm like, no, go ahead. And he's like, I got him like a marble whale because he loves whales. And I was like, okay, I hope it's true. I don't know, is it very...
What did you think about the gift?
It was beautiful. Remember, I pulled it up and then I lifted up my sleeve and I am a little whale tattoo.
Went in the video, bro. We have it.
Yeah. It was sick.
But what does the whale represent?
So the whale was kind of a bit of a inside joke of one of my companies. Sometimes you refer to clients in whatever industry you're in as whale clients. Oh, I caught a whale. And then it just started catching on. And then I remember this, maybe in 2018, I hit my first ever... It was like $150,000 or $200,000 a month or something that was very big at the time.
Okay.
And I was like, I need to celebrate. So I just ordered myself a massive whale statue. And then it just kind of, from there, it kind of snowballed and became a thing. And
is the unicorn going to be the next tattoo? Or
I can't imagine. You guys don't have any tattoos, do you?
No, bro, we're virgins. Yeah, man. We're virgins. Like,
would you ever consider it?
Yes. Yeah, I think we've had opportunities. I'm a bit of a pussy, to be honest. Like,
I've heard of these, like, really good pop-ups where, like, they have tattoo artists that are... some people get like tattoos of this like really cool brand.
Everybody except us.
Wait, maybe we also have a bunch of audience coming here that don't know us and know Eman and come from him. Hey, we kind of have a clothing brand. It doesn't look by the... Kind of. We have a brand. No, we have a brand that's doing very decent. And yeah, we have the pop-ups where people get our name tattooed and stuff. Not my name personally, because that would be very weird. But the brand's name. And no, we've bitched out every time. Like, I think one day we'll grow a man. We'll dress like E-Man with his suits and stuff and start considering the next tattoo. But hey, you took a good break from podcasts. No, you had a while where you did a bunch of them. Now, I think you told me you weren't doing any.
I'm off podcasts, so I've declined any requests for the last, I think, 8 months. And I think definitely for at least another 6 months, maybe another year.
Uh-huh.
No more podcasts.
How's your Spanish, by the way? You got any words?
Entiendo todo, pero no hablo bien.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking about this last time. I know all the ones you need to know, like, muy bonita, mi amor.
Okay.
¿Qué pasa?
No, this summer in Ibiza, you're going to go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first question for today is related to something that I heard you saying, I know, sometime, where you were talking about the levels of stress that you have when you start making certain levels of money, right? And I remember you said that at the point you are right now, you have to deal with big stress, right? And as we are all right now in a private jet, my first question is, are you happy?
You know, this is a very interesting question. This is something I've been thinking about a lot recently, because I find it almost, and I know you don't mean it in a bad way, I find it weird or almost insulting when people ask me that.
Right.
Here's why. Because, listen, I may not be what other people consider happy, which for me, happy, when other people are talking about it, they just mean like peace.
Okay.
Do you have peace in your life? I may not have peace. I may not be happy. But like, does it really matter when I go for Sunday lunch with my mom and my chauffeur picks her up in $1 million Phantom, and at lunch I ask her, it's my mom's birthday and after tomorrow actually.
Uh-huh.
And ask her, do you want an apartment in London or Dubai for your birthday? Like, does it really actually fucking matter that all those times that I was unhappy? Like, does it really matter when last month we went to Nepal and we visited, you know, we only got a chance to visit three schools that I built over the last 4 or 5 years? Thousands of kids who get education. Does it really matter when I go to my employee's wedding and he's so happy and grateful? He's like, bro, this entire wedding, the reason I can treat my wife and make all this possible is because of the opportunities that are afforded to me by working at your company.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I've been able to financially flourish ever since working at your company and obviously put in so much hard work, but still. Like, for me, I'm just like, does it really fucking matter?
So like, you say you would sacrifice a little bit of peace? But
I'm saying, to be honest,
like, the outcome is...
I don't give a shit about happiness. I do believe that there is a divine purpose why each of us are here. There's certain things that you guys can do that I simply cannot do. And I'm not going to try to step into your lane. And I think some people shouldn't step into my lane, which is why I always give the warning to people that, listen, if you want my life, it comes with a lot of torment and not much peace. Because at the end of the day, listen, you could be in a private jet. Sure, we're having a great conversation this time. But many times when... You know, I'm flying private. My mind is racing. Unfortunately, I'm not looking out the window and looking at the clouds. And, you know, maybe that is also a testament to where I am. I don't know if you guys ever read the book, King Warrior Magician Lover.
No.
It's like these four different archetypes, and each man kind of goes through these different archetypes. And I'm definitely still in that warrior stage. And there will come a day where, you know, I'm sure I do look out the window and I look at the clouds, but that day isn't today.
I love that.
So... For me, I'm just very self-aware of why I think I'm here, and why I think I'm here is to take care of, at first it was my mom,
uh-huh.
Then it was my friends, and then it was my company, and then it was my philanthropy, and then now I feel like it's the greater good of the world. And I just don't prioritize happiness, because for me, I think you can prioritize happiness, but in a way it's almost very selfish. Because by the way, listen, like, men need to step up and they need to do things whether they want to do it at all. Like, I would find it disrespectful to ask someone who's in the middle of a war, are you happy? It's like, does it really fucking matter? You're doing what you need to do, and you're doing it to protect the people that you need.
I didn't do it with that intent.
I know, of course, it's a good probing question. I don't mean in this situation, but
yeah, I get what you
said. For me, I just think it's a bit futile sometimes.
The only thing I would argue, you know, and it's been something I've thought about a lot, is that I think these type of lives where you devote yourself a lot to work or to a bigger outcome, no, anything you can think of, things start going very fast because everything starts happening. Oh, you're doing this, you're flying this place, and it doesn't stop. And for me, looking back, and we've only been in this journey for like 4 years now, so it's quite early. But I look back and I think, like, fuck, maybe there's certain times I would have wished I would have enjoyed it a bit more instead of thinking about the next thing. And then, because if you have an ambitious lifestyle, though, you're always going to be thinking about the next big things. So do you ever, like, do you feel like you enjoy certain moments, or you get the joy out of, even if you're working and traveling, do you enjoy those moments? or is still sacrifice?
And like, for example, I enjoy moments, but I enjoy moments in a different way than most people think. Like, for example, I got delivery of my Phantom 2 weeks ago. My friends were like,
Phantom, Rolls Royce Phantom, for people don't know.
And I'd already spent 400 grand on cars that week. That was the second car I bought that week. And, you know, my friends were like, oh, shouldn't you enjoy it? And I'm like, why? It's just a car. Like, who gives a for me, I think it's more concerning if you look at the car and you're like, that makes your week. Like, that doesn't make my week. For me, the Phantom is like, I can do it, so why not? I mean, the Jet is, I'm very fortunate, I'm very blessed, and I have my team, my friends, my family, God to thank for this. Mm-hmm. But like, I do it because it's comfortable, but I don't know, for me, I don't need to sit here and think, oh, blah, 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 this, that. Like, for me, I get my joy. I think it's important to get joy. I think it's important to appreciate little moments.
Okay.
But like, for me, a little moment was a month ago in Nepal when we were visiting the schools. And
when you say the schools, it's schools that you've made.
No,
yeah, tell us a bit more about it.
So basically, in 2019, I started taking profits from one of my companies and using that to build schools in Nepal.
Okay.
So we built schools for thousands and thousands of kids.
Why Nepal?
I get that question a lot. Basically, it's not necessarily about Nepal. It's about making sure the money goes to the right place. And it's funny, if you go to, and listen, for me, I don't want to donate $500,000 or $1 million a year to Red Cross and be like, cool, tick, I don't hurt, I'm a good person. Like, for me, like, I actually really care about what we do in Nepal. I care about making sure the projects go in the right direction. So it's funny, if you go to charities and you say, hey, every year I'd like to donate $500,000 a year, whatever, let's say even $10,000 a year. Most of them just think you're laundering money, or they think you're doing something fishy, or they're like, they don't take you seriously because it almost seems too ridiculous.
Sure.
So I was very lucky to be put in contact with Alan, who's the chairman of Pahar Trust, and we've had a good relationship over the last 4 years, built many projects together. So anyways, that's a little bit about Nepal.
It's insane. I want to go first to the beginnings, because right now you're 23, you're super successful, you're building like schools in Nepal. It's just mind-blowing, right? But I've heard that you had a really tough childhood. You didn't meet your father, or?
Yeah, so basically my biological father was alcoholic abusive, and yeah, apparently alcoholic abusives are very charming when they're drunk. So my mom was young and naive, and she stayed with him for some time, but when eventually she was pregnant, obviously he's not just affecting one person. At that point, he's affecting two people, not only giving my mom black eyes and leaving her bloodied and bruised. At that point, he's affecting me as well. And I think that's when my mom really had the courage to finally leave. And I had a very simple, for the first 4 years, I had a very simple childhood. I grew up in a place called Dagestan in Russia. My grandma raised me, which was my grandma and grandpa, I should say, which was very nice. I was in a little farm that my grandpa built with his own two hands. There was no toilet, so you would go take a right, past the chickens and cows.
Black and white TV.
Black and white TV, that whole thing. And, you know, lunch would be a soup made of whatever you could find in the fridge, so the soup would be like potato and leaves and chicken with the bones still in it, and like fucking nails, literally anything they could find.
It's crazy that you remember, right? Because you were 4 years old.
I have a lot of photos and I have those fond memories. And, you know, over the years after, when I could go back, it kind of brought everything back to life.
Uh-huh.
So that happened. And then eventually my mom was in Moscow for work and she ended up meeting my stepdad. They dated for like a year, year and a half. Then they moved to London together, kind of tried living together. Eventually he proposed, you know, married. I moved to London and my life totally changed. You know, it was like something out of a fairy tale. And things were okay. I mean, listen, they didn't have a very happy relationship, and he wasn't around much, and he was a very, very evil man in many ways. He was, would discipline me. That was for sure.
He wanted you and your mom to be like dependent on him in some way, or?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. No, listen, he was, if we start getting into conditions and stuff like that, he ticked every box for a psychopath or sociopath, narcissist, Satanist. He was, whatever. That's a very long story. The crux of it is that by the time I was 8 or 9 years old, he kind of cut us off. Kind of my life changed entirely at that point, where, you know, he wasn't sending us much money. He was sending her a little bit of money just to take care of her and myself. Then eventually he cut us off. My mom went back to working 2-3 jobs. And that was very, very painful for me to see. You know, my mom going through two very difficult relationships. One I didn't get to see, one I did see very clearly. And I remember there were 6 months where my mom did not leave her room. I didn't think she was going to make it. She was very on the brink. So seeing that at a young age.
It definitely has to, like, me and Alex talk about it quite a bunch, but I think we've both been very lucky with our parents and how they've raised us, and I think they've given us some very decent values, and it's been very different, though, but I think we're very grateful. And when we meet the most unbalanced people I think I've ever met personally, when I dig a bit deeper into their background, it usually comes from unbalanced homes, you know? And I've seen, like, a very deep correlation of, like, oh, how was your childhood? That kind of shapes you. Even this podcast, The Diary of a CEO, I don't know if you know the podcast, is from the UK. He always starts with, like, oh, so how was your childhood? No, and how was, because I think it really does shape you. And seeing you from the outside, no, from what we've seen, that very, like, man has to take care of everything, has to suffer type of thing, it, like, it makes sense. No, it comes from your mom not being able to take care of herself and having, as a 10-year-old child, or now I don't know how old you were, having to be the man of the family. You know, that's things I think guys usually don't have to do.
Yeah, you know, I always say you either do something out of inspiration or desperation, and obviously you guys were inspired to do everything that you do.
It's up to you completely. No, because I think even coming from a very wealthy family or having a very wealthy background can even be detrimental for you, no? Because that motivation you're saying that comes out of desperation, bro, when you have everything in life and when your dad has given you anything you've ever wanted, there's no sense of desperation in any sense, no? There's no sense of suffering, there's no sense, at least in that context. So I think it's sometimes even harder to do once you've had everything when you were younger, you know? Today, you know? But you've had the craziest lifestyle, no? And for me, it'd be like, yo, what? You have a lot of more life to live, you know? Like, what's next?
Or... I just remembered one story. It was a very beautiful story about one guy that I think, like, he lost his dad, or, like, he was abandoned by his dad, or something like that. And he started a YouTube channel himself teaching kids how to do certain things that dads typically teach you. Like, for example, he made videos about how to tie a tie.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, how to change a tire.
Yeah.
He made all these type of videos, and he had this crazy story about, like, losing his dad or something like that.
Wow.
And I remember, I thought it just was amazing. And right now, I thought something... I don't know if there's something in the mission about your content, because I think your content is oriented about helping men in general become the best versions of themselves. Do you feel like that moving you to make what you do?
So it is a massive disadvantage, and I think it's something that I definitely want to help men with, whether they have a father or not, because that's the other interesting thing is I had no dad, but that meant that I could be the man that I wanted to be. And that's the interesting thing. It's because a lot of people, they may have fathers, but I'm going to be honest, most men aren't exceptional men, and most men don't have good wisdom and don't have good advice. Most men haven't lived a broad enough life and have good enough life experience to truly impart wisdom on their son. So the thing is, if you have a father and your father doesn't think correctly, you may absorb 10%, you may absorb 20%, you may absorb 50% or even 80% of what he believes, and what he believes is wrong, and he isn't the right direction or isn't the right guidance, well then you're already at a disadvantage. So in a weird way, I almost had a greater advantage.
Yeah, like a clean slate.
I had a full clean slate, and most of the time, the majority of the time, it goes wrong. But in my example, as I said, once again, I'm very grateful to my mother. I'm very grateful to the people I had around me. I'm very grateful to God. I'm very grateful for the direction I've had, because, yeah, I was able to become the man that I wanted to be. And I'm not perfect. I still have, I'm 23. I'm not,
that's crazy.
You know, I'm not insensitive to my age, and I'm not insensitive to the fact that I have a lot more life to live, but I feel like I, every day, take one foot forward and step in the direction of the man that I want to be.
And yeah, let's go back just a tiny bit, in the sense that for people that maybe don't know, while we're in a private jet, it's not because of us. We can't afford this, so it's definitely you. And that's what I want to get into, like, Spanish audience, they're thinking, like, what do you do? No? What does this guy do? And that's kind of what I want to break into, like, where does the money come from and how do you start? Just briefly the start, but more now, like, the sources of income right now.
Very long story, as in a lot of people look at my career and business and stuff, and they go, oh, wow, you're a genius, and you did this after this after this. And it's like, no, when you first start, I'm sure, for example, when you guys started a new project, they're like, okay, we're going to do this one thing. You never fucking thought that it would turn into what it did.
Yeah, it wasn't a business plan. It was no idea.
You know, you just put one foot forward. So basically what happened was, obviously I was broke.
And
I wanted to take care of my mom. And I started a few little side hustles when I was like 14. I started flipping Instagram accounts and like building up Instagram accounts up, and then selling shout outs, then buying other Instagram accounts and all the stuff. And then I told you guys yesterday, I started learning about fitness and personal training and this and that. And then I basically hustled my friends' parents and convinced them to let me personal train them for like 20 pounds an hour. And I sold them like 2 month packages and stuff like that. And then eventually that led me onto picking up a camera and learning how to work a camera and stuff like that. And I started doing freelance photo video stuff for people. And then that turned into having an agency, a creative agency. And that was great. And that helped me hit my first, you know, $20,000-$30,000 a month, which by the way is incredible, amazing money. But it's, for me, it came with a lot of stress and headache, which I have a lot more stress and headache now, but it's a different kind of stress. Back then, you know, clients were asking me, you know, this is great, but what's the return on investment? And that would just piss me off so much because I'm a very sort of like logical, analytical person. And that's kind of how I got my start in advertising. So late 2017, early 2018, I transitioned into having an advertising agency. Did that for a few years. Then from there, built an e-learning platform. At that point, I was starting to toy with the idea of software because I realized, like, you know, I'm telling people to use softwares that I thought were inferior, and I'm sending some of these softwares hundreds of thousands of dollars a month in business, you know, because my audience was very wealthy agency owners. They're spending a lot of money on softwares because you need some software is to run the company and this and that. Actually, one of my agency clients, her husband eventually came to me and was like, listen, I want to start the software company with you. I've already started it. It was in a totally different industry. And after a couple of years toying with the idea, I was like, finally, you know what, let's do it. And that was the first software company I started in 2020. That thing has taken off. I've bought other software companies since then. Also the e-learning company has grown as well. It's our number one way to get customers for the software. So it's cool because we'll get customers for the e-learning, and then because they build their agency and they grow their agency, transition to, then they use all my other software companies as well.
Is it the software agency flow? Is it the number one like income source right now or no?
It depends whether you mean cash flow or whether you mean net worth.
And yeah, because that valuation for the software.
Because that's the other thing, you know, in terms of, if we're talking about what it's done for my wealth, then it's not even a question. It has to be the software companies because you're getting 10 to 15 times revenue. And also our margins are so insane because we don't advertise for the software companies, right? So that's in terms of wealth, but in terms of cash flow, the e-learning company has taken off in the last 6 to 9 months in a crazy way.
And do you have any partners in any of these businesses or no?
I have right-hand people that have percentage of profit share in one of my software company. I have a business partner in equity, but yeah, apart from that, I have partners, but they get profit
share on equity. And but like main percentage of the company is all yours, yeah?
100%. For the e-learning company, like how does it work? Do people pay a subscription fee to access all the content or how?
So with that, it's a one-time fee, and then we're moving to subscription very shortly. And in some of the, for some of that more advanced stuff, we have subscription stuff. So many other stuff. I have an eyewear company, as you guys know.
Yeah.
I've started investing in the last 2 years. I've started investing in maybe 10, 15 different companies because I get so many offers on the table because people know I have money and I have an audience. So I get a lot of offers for to invest in different companies and stuff like that. So yeah, I'll tell you guys that stuff. I kind of keep a little bit more under wraps.
Yeah.
Tell you guys off camera, but a lot of companies that you probably use and have heard of in best table.
For me, I have a lot of respect just out of the bag for anyone, any entrepreneur that does it all by themselves has instant respect from my side because I think it's so fucking hard. Like, just the world of business is quite tough as a thing because it's just a lot of outputs, a lot of inputs, a lot of people dealing with a lot of humans. And for me, having Alex has been fucking amazing because it's like, we both started with nothing. We started with no big idea of like, yo, there's going to be a $1 million band. It was just like, oh, let's do this. And then all of a sudden, everything we've had to deal with, our life has changed completely. But he kind of understands me. Like, I have one person in this planet, even if I love my parents, okay, I love them to death. They'll never fully understand because they've been in different situations in their lives, you know? And I only have one person that fully understands me, bro. We'll go home. We live together. So doing it alone, it's a different movie.
No, but you guys deserve your fucking flowers because listen, to be in your early 20s, to have 70 employees, to have physical stores, bro, that's a lot of fucking responsibility. And not only that, like I feel as though you guys have like the weight of the culture in Spain. Like you guys, like people look up to you, you know, and people are always watching your every single move. So that's a lot of fucking pressure.
But what you said, bro, and I don't know if it was off camera or if it was on camera, like what matters is keeping it. You know, like we've had a small taste of what it could be. And now let's keep it and let's keep going. And that's what scares me, you know, because it's like, bro, content is so hard to be relevant constantly. And we're a content-based company, I would say, you know, everything we try to translate this lifestyle into the brand. It's content, content, content. And being on the latest platform, being on TikTok, doing the extract, doing everything, bro, it drives you crazy at times, you know, because it's nonstop. Like, there's literally, you're here right now, we're talking, bro, there's 20 people trying to be Iman. Or 20,000 maybe is more like it, you know? So it's, and they want exactly what you have. They want the private jet, they want the lifestyle, they want everything that comes with it. So it's like, when you get to a certain point, everyone is not that, before I feel like you have no pressure because it's like, I have nothing to lose. Now you have a lot to lose, you know? You're supporting your mother, you have a fucking film crew, you have securities, it's like, you have a lot of people on your payroll. So bro, that's when it gets, like, have you ever felt that pressure of like, yo, do you have a person to talk to where you can be like, yo, this is a person that will get me?
I think, listen, I have a lot of people in my life that have had a lot of pressure, but it's interesting because there's a few different types of pressure. There's the financial pressure, and then there's the social media pressure. And like, there's so many different aspects. And then there's like the pressure of being in your 20s, like early, you know, in your 20s with access to money, women, basically whatever the fuck you want, right? And all of these are different pressures. So I've met people who understand the pressure of money. I've met people who understand the pressure of social media. I've met people that understand the pressure of having access to pretty much whatever you want at a young age. Finding people who understand the pressure of all those combined is very, very difficult because, listen, you may have a mentor to you who understands, started a business at a young age, but he didn't have social media thrown in there. He didn't have the people's opinion. You know, we were talking about this last night. You guys get fucking 50 million people view your shit every single month. That's a lot of eyeballs. That's a lot of opinions. And that can take a toll on some people. Like, I will say, I am probably one of the most stoic people you'll ever meet. I just don't feel pressure. I don't know what it is.
It's never got to do like a little wave of Iman hate and you're like, ah.
No.
You really don't give a fuck. You tell me, just look at me straight in the eyes.
I'll look you straight in the eyes and I'll tell you, I don't feel that. Sometimes what I feel is I feel a little jaded. Sometimes it's not the pressure gets to me. It's the, fuck man, like why? And this maybe happens twice a year where I go, fuck man, like why me? Like why am I the person who has to do all of this for everyone? You know, because listen, of course everyone sees my life and they see this and that. And yeah, I'm sure I may have some nice things around me, but other than that, like I can almost see from the bottom of my heart, say everything I do, pretty much everything I do for the people around me. So sometimes I feel that and I go, fuck man, like why me? And then it usually lasts for like 10 minutes. And then I snap out of it and I remember my favorite book. It's a book called Atlas Shrugged. I actually have it tattooed here on me.
Okay.
Atlas holding up the world.
Okay.
And I realize, as I said, I think some of us do have divine purpose why we're here. I think I was given a certain life because I believe that I'm here for a specific reason. And all of the blessings, like when I feel jaded, I just remember that all the fucking blessings, everything I have around me, everything that all my friends and my team and everyone gets to benefit from, that's because I took the pressure on my shoulders. And it's an honor. Like it should be, you know, I always say it's an honor, not a job. You know, like for me, this shit is an honor, not a job. I'm feel honored that I get to do this. And yes, it's difficult. Yes, very few people will understand, but that's an honor that was bestowed on me. So I'm grateful for that.
Well, and what's that big mission? What do you think is your purpose?
Listen, I think from year to year, it changes, you know, and I think back in 2018, 2019, I think it's like foolish to say like, I'm going to change the world. And I still don't believe I'm going to fucking change the world.
But you have to believe it, no, in some sense?
No, because I don't think you could change.
You don't think Steve Jobs changed the world?
I think he made a bunch of lives better. But at the end of the day, like, tell me honestly if your life truly, unless you knew about Apple products, truly would be changed if you had an Apple product compared to Samsung products. If you didn't know Apple products existed, Samsung, you would not fucking know the difference. You would go along your life and be like, Samsung's great. I love Samsung. Right? So I think it's very important to be very honest with yourself what you're trying to accomplish. Because some people are here trying to say, I'm trying to change the fucking world. I know I'm never going to do that. But if I can nurture the next generation of men, I feel like that will have a ripple effect. If I can do right by my team, if I can do right by my people, if I can build some schools that will be there for hundreds of years and do some of the other philanthropic things that I do.
You're a businessman? No, but towards YouTube, you're kind of a motivational speaker. No, you bring out a motivational speech for the kids to be like, yo, I want to be like him, or I want to do this, or at least I want to find my own way. But I would say you're not the typical guy. Like when we grew up, like the motivational speakers were like in front of the Ferrari and they're like, you want this car? Well, come along. And it was like, it felt a bit more fake, you know, but it worked initially because there was the clickbait of the Ferrari and the guy, and you're like, okay, that I kind of want that. But I think that doesn't work anymore. You don't see it as much.
No, I was saying an evolution.
There's been an evolution in the type of content. And I think what's cool with you is that you kind of show both sides of the atlas in some sort of say. You have like this thing you call monk mode, which we'll call about. And then you also show that even though you're working all day, you're also having fun. No, you're enjoying yourself. You go out, trips, vacation.
Let's say hi to the pilot.
Okay, hello, sir.
Let's go back to monk mode.
Yeah, monk
mode. We really love this concept of yours.
It's something I've applied in my life, honestly.
And it's something that we live by. We have this. We kind of say that we live happy in the disbalance. How would you say that?
Yeah, like we also don't have a balanced lifestyle. And people ask us like, oh, how is it? No, don't you want a balance? Because everyone says that balance is the good thing, you know? And we say like, yo, we're very happy in the comfort of this balance right now.
At least for now.
For now. I don't know what I'm going to be like in my 30s. I have no idea and I don't want to go ahead. But I'm happy with the non-balance. As young people, I think we get so distracted with phones constantly. Like, anything, messages, is just a constant stimulation of things. And focus is something that we're going to start valuing even more nowadays because it's so hard to find.
Yeah.
TikTok fucks with your focus. Anything that you consume on social media, I think, kind of just breaks you from that razor sharp focus, which you need to create big things, no? And
tell us.
I'll let you talk.
What is monk mode?
So monk mode is a protocol that I formulated, started in 2019, but started 2020, I started talking about it properly. And it was just very similar to you guys. I like basically go big or go home. I like the extremes. So monk mode is anywhere from 21 to 90 days.
Okay.
You can choose. The thing is, I don't think it's smart for someone to come in who's super sloppy, unfocused, their life's a mess, and just do 75 days or 90 days from the get-go. So I wanted to make it something as short as 21 days. 21 days is really the minimum you want to do. And I wanted to set it so there's minimum variables. So for example, one of the minimum variables or mandatory variables that you have to do is 15 minutes a day of meditation. Because for me, like, there's nothing that's more important than like sitting with yourself and just understanding the demons and the chaos in your brain. You know, exercise, daily exercise. And the other thing is no alcohol or no weed. I know weed is some people are like, oh, it makes me focus. This cool.
I don't know. The people that say that makes him focus, that's.
You're
French.
I personally don't agree. And also, fuck you, this is my protocol. So, no way.
Okay.
So, those are like the mandatory variables. And then you can add 1 to 3 others, right? So, one variable may be, okay, you want to pray once a day. Or maybe another variable is you want to do, I've done it before where I do no caffeine just to try that. Or no, a certain amount of screen time per day. Screen as in on your phone.
Huh?
So, you can add all these extra variables. So, that way you can kind of customize it and it's flexible. Because it said I don't like protocols that are too rigid because it's unrealistic. And the thing I like about monk mode is, bro, even girls are like, oh, are you on monk mode? And like they understand, like it's something that people can understand. Whereas like 75 hard, a girl's not going to be like, oh, are you currently 75 harding? Like,
yeah.
You know, so monk mode is just something, it's easy for people to visualize. And I don't know, I guess it just kind of took off.
Uh-huh. And are you on monk mode right now or no? You're chilling. He's got the whiskey now. He's chilling.
No monk.
And how much do you practice it a year? Like, is it only 21 days a year? Or
I'd say it depends on
how you feel.
Usually around half the year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And usually it depends on where I am. It's location dependent. Because there's some places where it's a lot easier to do it. And also there's times of year. Like, for example, when I go back to Dubai after my Europe travels, I'm going to do monk mode. Because it's like mid-April to mid-May. It's hot. There's not many people that are visiting. And I'm basically just going to be at home in my villa, boxing every day, meditating, working. So doing the no alcohol and all this other stuff
is easy.
It's very easy. But when you're traveling, like London used to be my home for a long time. So when I go to London, it's
yeah, wavy.
Was light.
No, okay. And when you're not in monk mode, you're going crazy, you know? Because, yeah, I see you. I follow you on Instagram. No, you have all the lavish, crazy lifestyle. No, you're all around. You're on a boat. You're on a yacht. You're at different places. Are you working there too?
Always work.
We're always working.
That's the thing. Like if you see me at a, dude, I'll be on a yacht with 15 girls, bunch of friends, all this stuff. And bro, I'm just sat there working 24/7.
So do you fully get to enjoy?
No.
You really don't.
And here's the other thing, you know, because I post stuff on social media, my YouTube is serious.
Yeah.
My TikTok and other stuff, I don't know, my team just repurposes. My Instagram, to me, don't ever look at my Instagram and take it seriously. Like, my Instagram is literally, sometimes I'm bored and I'm like, okay, cool, let's take some photos. My friends airdrop me and let's post it. I'm not trying to be a good business guy. I'm not trying to tell you how to live life. I'm not trying to give you any value. My Instagram is zero value. It's just, for some people, I guess, motivational, because they see the life I live. And, you know, of course, I still post stuff about giving back and what I'm doing and stuff with my mom and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
But my Instagram is just like a little shit show. It's just a bunch of photo dumps.
Uh-huh. And do you think, like, to a guy that from the outside looks at your Instagram and says, yo, this guy's a douchebag, or this guy thinks
I would
shit.
Think I'm a douchebag. Like, it's just, my Instagram is, I don't care. Because I'm, the other thing is, like, I know, realistically, anyone who's on my Instagram, 80% of the people on my Instagram come from YouTube.
Yeah.
So, like, on YouTube, they're like, okay, I understand his business, what he's gone through. And then they're like, they celebrate my life because they're like, fuck, I know what it took for him to live the life that he's living.
Yeah.
And the other 20%, I don't care.
You know, fuck this guy.
Because I look like a trust fund.
And it's funny. Jesse, he was helping us for the podcast, and he said, he wrote this thing that you probably said down or something. And it was like, when you're on a jet or you're flying first class, business class, or whatever, people look at you and they're like, oh, this guy looks like a trust fund kid. No? And they say, what does your dad do? And it was funny, the response you said, don't know, never met the guy.
That's
crazy. I thought I was crazy. But it's true. And I think one thing you said that was very important was, if people truly see what it takes to get there, and I think you've done something that's very exceptional that maybe not a lot of people have done, which is document your life since you were like 16. Like, how many people have actually filmed all of their upcomings from 16? Mm-hmm. People can actually celebrate your success. There will always be jealous people and envious. I think it's normal and it's part of humanity.
Because they identify with the struggles. People identify more with the struggles of the character than with the victories, right?
And if you're showing everything at the end of the day, it's like, okay, he'll show the good things and people will be like, yo, fuck him, man, he made him, bro, he's amazing. And the opposite side, if it gets fishy when no one knows what you do, where the money comes from, or why you're being able to afford this, you know? Because I feel like people instantly get in the investigation mode, like, what the fuck does this guy do? You know, what does he really do?
Interesting thing about my channel is you can go back and you can sort from oldest and look at videos in 2015 where I'm broke and I'm like, there's literally clips of me being like, oh my God, I can't wait to be able to afford Uber. Like, bus sucks. I there's videos of me being like, yeah, there's this healthy food place, but it's like 10 pounds, so I can't afford that. Like, so that's why I have to keep eating fucking,
wow,
this video, like, it's crazy, bro, the shit that I have. And all the way down to, like, me signing my first client and being like, oh my God, this is crazy. This, even in 2016, there's videos of me and I'm like, oh, I set my goal this year. 2016 is really the first year that I kind of took business seriously. And I saw her halfway into the year. I remember August. It was after a breakup, actually. First ever breakup. I came back. And I was like, okay, time to stop. Because I was reading a bunch of books and I was meditating and I was doing all these positive things. I was like, it's time to fucking make some money. I set the goal. It was end of August to make 15,000 pounds. And I made 15,000. And I was like, is this the fucking craziest thing to me? But I've got all this documented. And I've got me signing my first client, my first ever like big client, being in their office and being like, hey, this is the founder, Sean.
That's crazy.
From this company, Athlete, I'm in their office and blah, blah, and it's all fucking documented. It's all the way to like signing my first hiring my first employee and my first ever employee joining the company when I was 17 years old. And then 3 days later, he leaves because the work is so boring, because he thought it was going to be like a creative, you know, have like months to work on a project. And it was very like technical, like, hey, we need this for clients on this deadline. And him being like, fuck this, I'm leaving. Like, and me just feeling like broken, like, fuck, I just hired my first employee and he left
after 3 days.
So,
and I think that's what gives you the credibility, you know? I think I've seen a couple of videos where people try to cancel you, or like, because they see the Instagram, they go on the Instagram, they're like, no, fuck this guy. Instantly, it's fuck this guy, you know? And I've seen people try to cancel you, and I've seen them at the end of the video being like, yo, I could actually not find anything bad about this guy. Apart from the things he believes and what he says, which you can be aligned with or not, He's actually made this himself. You know, it's real.
And like, I just want to say a big shout out. I'm about to smoke a nice multi-crystal number two that one of my fans got me. And another fan gave me this as well, which is a DePaul lighter. Like, these things are fucking $1,000.
Like, bro, we were talking the other day, yesterday, We're the same age. You look like a grown man. Like, you smoke cigars. This guy has a suit on when we arrived. Bro, I was like, yo, you're in a different time frame. Like, I don't know if this is the lesson thing.
Like, you like... Like, my top five favorite artists, I'd say, is, like, Amy Winehouse, Michael Jackson, Otis Redding, Drake.
Because he's a fucking goat.
Okay, he's just wavy.
And probably Brent Faiyaz.
Oh, no, hey, look at you, a little...
I love Brent.
Little hippie type of vibe. No, no, yeah.
But you're on, you know, so... No, bro, I'm just a bit of a grandpa in general. Yeah.
Hey, you, what are you doing right now? You're cutting this cigar?
Cutting a cigar with the cheapest cutter. And that's the one thing we did have, is the cutter.
You either have security because you're well-known, and you get to a certain point where you're, like, very well-known.
Yeah.
Like, where you, as I said, people are...
You can't walk around.
Yeah, like, people are walking out. Like, bro, listen, if I come out of a restaurant, I'm not going to have paparazzi.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that crazy. It's not that deep.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of, like, for example, when I go for a run, like Cape Town, for example, I like to go running in Cape Town. You know, it's funny, people were like trolling me because my head of security always drives behind me in one of my wagons.
I know, wait.
You know, and it's like, I think people think it's for sure. It's not for sure. It's just that happens to be one of the cars that I own. And it's every 3 minutes, someone will stop and ask for a photo or like ask for, or like wave.
Cape Town.
Yeah. And it's like, I will, you know, it's funny. I'll always interrupt my run and I'll always stop my run and take a photo. But it's like, if then, like, I'm running, like, you can see I'm running. If then you start trying to talk to me for 5 minutes, like, bro, I'll stop, I'll ask your name, I'll show you love, I'll take a photo. Like, I don't mind taking, like, 2 or 3 minutes out of my day, but if it starts getting to, like, 5 or 10 minutes, if I didn't have security there, it gets a little
rough,
you know? Whereas, like, with Axe, my head of security, this is the signal. This means, okay, cool, close it off. Like, I need to kind of get back to what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
Or, for example, you want to wear jewelry or watches. Like, for example, in London or in Europe, basically anywhere except for Dubai, where I live, it's unsafe to wear watches. Like, so for me, let me put it this way. If I could make the decision of not having security, but also not being able to wear, like, a $300,000 watch, fuck the watch. Like, bro, I don't give a shit. I don't care. But because I have security, I wear the watches. So most of the time, people have security because they want to wear nice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm cool not wearing jewelry or watches and stuff. You know what it is? Because here's the thing. There's two types of fame. There's the fame where someone comes up and people just want something from you.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want a photo. You know, like, for example, I don't give a fuck what I am doing. I don't care how tired I am. Even my head of security and the rest of my security sometimes ask, like, listen, just tell me if you're, like, not feeling it today. I'm like, bro, these people watch me. Like, you know how much of a fucking honor it is? Like, you know how... Like, the fact that these people take the time out of the day to listen to what I'm saying, and what I'm... Because I woke up on the wrong side of bed, I'm not going to take a fucking photo. Like, to me, that's ridiculous. Like, so I don't care what I'm doing. I will take a photo, and most importantly, I'll ask a little bit about them.
For us, there was a big turning point between... And this was amazing. When we first started, like, making a small amount of money, it was, like, being able to order food out was the big... Like, I think it was... It's been one of the biggest turning points in my life where it's like, fuck, bro. Being able to order food out and say it's money we made. Or do you remember the first time we went to a hotel and we paid with a company? Bro, it was like a 2-star hotel. It was the wackiest hotel. But we arrived, we were visiting factories in Portugal. Bro, we arrived to the hotel, me and Alex look at each other and we're like, fuck. It was like our first business trip. We're like, we paid for this, you know? Like, this is, boy. And it felt so fucking good. And then it slowly starts getting to a point, and we've not reached that point yet, no? But you realize that material things don't really... Apart from those initial moments, and there's an initial barrier where if you break, your life is going to be incrementally much better. It doesn't get way much better.
But bro, every night, I swear to God, every night when I get in bed in my villa, and my maid, who is an absolute queen, so much, I get in bed, and... I have fresh sheets every night. That's like one of the things that, like, for me is important. I have fresh sheets every night. And like, bro, every single night I get in and I'm like, fuck, man. Like, I feel successful. Like that's like my I made it moment, you know? So like it, but whereas for some people, they may not care. So I think it's just find what's important to you and don't feel ashamed spending money on it.
Do you lose perception of money? You know, like, I feel like, bro, you're telling me, like, $1 million or $350,000. It's like, even, I don't know how much this cost to be on this today, but it wasn't cheap. You know, it doesn't sound cheap. So it's like, and I've gotten that talking to people that have made a lot of wealth, where I'm talking to them and they're just losing perception. You're like, oh, $250,000. Like, bro, people don't make that in a year. You know, people don't make that in a year. People don't make that in their lifetime sometimes, you know? Like, have you felt that? Like, fuck, I don't have a grasp of money anymore. Like,
for me, I have to invest. And right, save / invest 70% of everything I'll be.
All right.
Because of where I am, because I'm 23. And the other 30%, I have to blow. Like, even if I don't want it from here, I need to spend the money. Because for me, it's like, what's the point in having all this money and not enjoying it? And another thing is, most of the time I spend money on other people. So what's the point in not, like, having your friends enjoy the experience of flying private or, you know, like, just...
Or holding into that money, you know?
Yeah, just... I don't know. I just personally don't respect frugal people. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, frugal means that you're so scared that you won't make more money. Or you've been so stupid that you lost money in the past and you didn't know how to manage it correctly. And basically, every 3 to 4 years, that percentage increases by 10%. So, for example, by the time that I'm 26, 27, I want to spend 40% of everything I make and save 60. By the time I'm 30, it needs to be 50-50. By the time I'm 34,
I just because life is getting too, like,
I want to die because I want to die with no money. And I'm not giving my son anything. My daughter's with
zero.
Zero. Fuck that.
You know, you said you didn't have a lot of inspirations, especially in the YouTube aspect. You said there's not a lot of people you admire or you respect. Maybe respect, yes, but admire, no, more like it. And I do have, for me, like, and I told Alex, no, because we're moving offices now. And I was like, bro, in the new offices, I want to have these three people on my wall. And it was Steve Jobs, Phil Knight, and Hugh Hefner. Playboy founder, Nike founder, and Apple founder. Companies to me that are fucking passionate, you know? Their lifestyle, their movement, they've become the leaders of their world, and Nike, for example, has been 30 years and they're still number one, which is fucking crazy. Do you have any role models or anything, or any people outside of YouTube, wherever it is that you do look up to them?
I would say, okay, so listen, in the YouTube game, there's a guy called Patrick Bet David.
Okay.
Valuetainment.
Uh-huh. That's nice, yeah.
Bro, he is just... exceptional.
He's
a fucking exceptional person. I've never met him.
I do.
Invited on their little podcast show thing they do. Another thing to respect, or at least I guess I can kind of resonate with more, is he had his Playboy days. In his 20s, he had his Playboy days, and then when he was 30 or late 20s or something, he found his queen, right? And they have a beautiful family, beautiful kids, and he's someone I really, really, really respect. Listen, I'm sure there's many, many other people in the YouTube game. I will be honest, I'm sure most people see that I don't hang out. I don't collab, I don't do streams with many people, but Patrick Bet David to me is like, I recommend everyone listen to him, you know, and you know, I think he's exceptional to be. And then outside of that, Drake.
And Drake 360 or like music wise, or it's like attitude, how he works?
360, because here's why. Number one, to get to the top and stay at the top. To get to the top is one thing. To stay there is like, that's truly like the thing of fucking legends. And it's also his team. Like for me, I want all my boys and my entire team, I want us all in fucking 5 years. And listen, me and my boys, we fly around in private jets and we all live good lives. And, you know, I have people in my company that make over $1 million a year working for a company. Over $1 million a year as an employee, you know, because that's also the thing. I don't believe in this whole, like, oh, if you're an employee. Like, I don't talk down on people who are employees. Like,
it's great. I don't think everyone should be an entrepreneur. You know, I don't think it's for everyone, and I think it's important. It's great. I think it's great to be an employee. If you admire the person you're working for, I think the bad thing is, like, these huge corporations where maybe they don't give a fuck what the brand wants to do or what the mission is, and they're just there to get a paycheck.
100%.
I don't think that's cool, but I think working for cool people that you admire, you're aligned with the vision, it's fucking great.
My entire team, we live well, we have a great life, but I want everyone in 10 years, 15 years, for, hey, maybe even 5 years, I want us all to be millionaires. And I know everyone in Drake's camp who is there with him for 10 years plus, bro, they're all sitting on multi-millions. It doesn't matter if it's fucking security. They all killed it, right? Because like for me, because of course the entire team should eat. And listen, it's a different story if someone's there for 1 or 2 years or maybe even 3 years, but if someone's been with you for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, like, I just really respect and admire the fact that he's still pretty much with everyone he started with.
Iman, sorry, we had to call you up there. The flight attendant literally just told us we're landing in like 5 minutes. So we're going to do the last segment we do in the podcast, which is rapid questions, okay? So as the fastest you can answer, the better. How much does it cost to fly in this private jet?
It was like 28, 30,000 pounds.
Best business model to get started as a new entrepreneur?
Anything that's service-based. And the most important thing when you start a business is something that you can start with $500 or less investment.
Never smoke another cigar or never have another drink?
I'll be honest, bro. I like a good drink sometimes, but I like a good cigar. I'd say probably no alcohol.
How much do you jerk off a week?
You shouldn't.
First thing you splurged on when you first made money?
My mom.
What are three things Iman doesn't want to share with anyone?
But I'd say a lot of my personal life. I was
okay. Guys. Top three millionaire habits.
To become a millionaire, don't drink. Meditate. I'd say probably journal, because you need to become self-aware.
In one word, what's the ultimate goal for Iman Gadzi?
honor.
Top advice for a 20-year-old kid that wants to be an entrepreneur.
Start small, and most importantly, extend your timeline. Don't think you're going to become a millionaire in a year.
Iman Gazi, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to arrive and land in London, which is about to be crazy. Iman, thank you so much.
Just like over there.
Look at the camera. Oh, yeah, you're looking literally, we're like about to land. So, guys, thank you so much for watching. Iman, thank you so much for your time and for the experience. This is fucking, like, I can't. There's no way I can say thank you to this because it's crazy. You know, you've changed my life. Now I've flown a private jacket, check it on my list, and we're good. But thank you so much. Anytime when you come to Spain, you know, you're going to have to be hit us up. We'll take you to Ibiza the right way. Let's hope. And yeah, anything else we want to say? No, I think we're speechless, no?
We're good. I appreciate you. You guys are one of very few that I have genuine admiration and respect for, like what you guys are doing out in Spain. The culture for your people, like,
and soon in the world,
and soon in the world, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
That's a wrap.